A lot of phrases and a lot of sayings that I grew up with are going the way of the dinosaur. I don't know if you've noticed that. You make comments, make a statement to someone, especially perhaps somebody a bit younger than you, and goes right over the head. I don't know how many people may be familiar with the phrase, the rat race. For those who don't know, the rat race is defined as a way of life in which people are caught up in a fiercely competitive struggle for wealth or power. It's defined by another source as an endless, self-defeating, and pointless pursuit. It says the phrase equates humans to rats attempting to earn a reward such as cheese to no avail. May also refer to a competitive struggle to get ahead financially or routinely. It describes those whose very lives are lived for money and power. We could include material possessions. We could include sometimes fame, as some people give their lives for those things as well. In Luke chapter 12, verses 13 through 21, just read, it describes a man whose life consisted, from his perspective, in the abundance of the things that he possessed. The text was just read. I'll read it again at this time. Someone in the crowd said to Jesus, this is beginning verse 13, "Tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Jesus replied, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" Then he said to them, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." And he told them this parable. He said, "The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. And he thought to himself, 'What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops.' Then he said, 'This is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself?' This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God." This man was caught up in the rat race. To call somebody a rat is obviously a demeaning term. When it's used of a person, it's defined as a person regarded as despicable. In anybody's dictionary, despicable is not a very positive thing. Actress, comedian Lily Tomlin said, "The trouble with the rat race is that even if you win, you're still a rat." As we read the parable in Luke 12, one of the immediate things we're confronted with in this parable of the rich man is how different is God's perspective from man's perspective. To us, someone is famous. To God, often that person is foolish. To us, someone is popular. To God, that person is often perishing. To us, someone is rich. To God, often that person is ruined. The man described in the parable is someone we would call ambitious, prudent, careful, successful. He would have been respected. He would have been esteemed very highly in the community. He would have been honored, considered to be very wise. But again, God called him a fool. This man was called a fool because he was investing only in things that were vanishing. This man's prosperity was all earthly, things of this world. material possessions. His farm produced plentifully. He was proud of his great harvest. It was time to build new barns. What more could he ask for? But everything that he possessed was temporary. And I see that my title is not coming up, but that's okay. To everything that he focused on, it was things that were passing away. You know, what if we worked every day and everything that we accumulated for that day vanished each night at midnight? And so you have to start all over every morning with nothing. Starting fresh every morning. I'm confident we would have a better understanding of the things that really matter in this life. What do you invest in every day that will last for eternity? Not your body. Whatever emphasis and effort you make at making yourself look presentable, maybe taking care of yourself, the way that you eat, things that you do physically to try to maintain health, not going to last for eternity. Not the things that you own, whatever investment you make in attaining those things, acquiring things, not your job, unless your job is devoted to the soul and spiritual endeavors. What do you invest in every day that you can take with you when you die? Saladin was the first sultan of Egypt and Syria. He was the founder of the Ayyub dynasty. And when Saladin died, around 1193 AD, a little more than 800 years ago, he left directions that his empty hands should be on view outside his coffin. By this, he meant to teach that of all his vast wealth, all his conquests, he could take nothing with him. As the Allman Brothers sang some decades ago, you can't take it with you when you go. Noting the kind of greed and materialistic heart that it would produce, someone else has said, you can't take it with you, but even if you could, all of it would probably get burned up the first day anyway. If we could take it with us, how much more would we be inclined to focus on things, stuff, material possessions? As God asked the rich man in the parable, this very night your life will be demanded from you, then who will get what you've prepared for yourself? What's going to happen to all that stuff then? What's going to happen regarding all those accomplishments? Ecclesiastes 2, verses 18 and 19, the writer says, suddenly I realized that others would someday get everything I had worked for so hard. Then I started hating it all. Who knows if those people will be sensible or stupid? Either way, they will own everything I have earned by hard work and wisdom. It doesn't make any sense. To put it another way, it's been said that dying rich produces the loudest laughter in hell. What are you going to do with all that stuff now? A couple of years ago, when we were living in Las Vegas, New Mexico, Santa Fe was only an hour's drive. And if you wanted anything besides Walmart and a few little stores of sorts, you had to go to Santa Fe. We were there one day in a little place called Tuesday Mornings. They've got one of those in Champaign now. And I don't recall if I went in or not, but Debbie was in getting a few things. hurrying, scurrying, piling up as much as she could. I'm just kidding. But she noticed an elderly little lady there. And who knows the circumstances behind it. Just the way it appeared, this lady was just filling her cart up with everything she could. And it's at least it had that appearance. And Debbie said she thought, here you are. I don't know how to put it, but I mean, you're aged. And you're still just trying to get everything that you can. When does it end? This man was a fool because he was investing only in things that were vanishing. This man was called a fool because he thought only of himself. Wealth tends to cause us to be more self-centered, to think less of others. It's said that one day a certain old rich man of a miserable disposition visited a rabbi who took the rich man and led him to a window. He said, "Look out there and tell me what you see." The man said, "Well, I see men, women, children, laughing, doing things, going on about their lives." So the rabbi then led him to a mirror and said, "Now what do you see?" He said, "Well, I see only myself," the rich man answered. The rabbi said, "In the window there's glass, and in the mirror there's glass. But the glass of the mirror is covered with a little silver, and no sooner is silver added than you cease to see others, and you see only yourself." In the latter part of Matthew chapter 25, Jesus describes the day of judgment. Reading verses 41 through 43, he says, "Then it'll be said to those on the left, 'Depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes, and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you did not look after me.'" It's interesting that Jesus does not mention terrible crimes against humanity here. He doesn't talk about egregious sins of immorality. His focus here is on a failure to take others into account. He's not denying that crimes and immorality will be punished. Instead, he's shocking his listeners with the realization that one does not have to commit horrid acts of wickedness to be separated from God eternally. His audience would have had no problem with the teaching that wickedness will be punished, while they confidently passed by the man beaten and lying on the roadside between Jerusalem and Jericho. The rich man in the parable seemed to have all that he needed. Yet when he was blessed with even more, he seemed to give no thought to helping others. He thought only of increasing his own possessions. Ephesians 4:28 says, "Be honest and work hard." Why work hard? He explains it in the rest of the verse. "Work hard so that you will have something to give to people in need." He doesn't say work hard so that you can build up yourself and all that you have and get more and more and more stuff. This man was a fool because he thought only of himself. He showed no concern for the needs of others. This man was called a fool because he was living for the moment, while at the very time he was facing eternity. His future seemed secure. He had plenty of goods laid up for many years. No retirement worries for him. The present day seemed perfect. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. It's time to relax. It's time to live it up. He thought he had many years, but this was his last night on earth. Daniel chapter 5 gives record of an account that occurred more than 500 years before Christ in the Babylonian kingdom. Reading beginning in verse 1, it says, King Belshazzar gave a great banquet for 1,000 of his nobles and drank wine with them. While Belshazzar was drinking his wine, he gave orders to bring in the gold and silver goblets that Nebuchadnezzar his father had taken from the temple in Jerusalem, so that the king and his nobles, his wives, and his concubines might drink from them. So they brought in the gold goblets that had been taken from the temple of God in Jerusalem, and the king and his nobles, his wives, and concubines drank from them. As they drank the wine, they praised the gods of gold and silver, the gods of bronze, iron, wood, and stone. Verse 5 says, but suddenly the fingers of a human hand appeared and wrote on the plaster of the wall near the lampstand in the royal palace. The king watched the hand as it wrote. His face turned pale, and he was so frightened that his legs became weak and his knees began to knock. The king summoned the enchanters, the astrologers, the diviners. Then he said to these wise men of Babylon, whoever reads this writing and tells me what it means will be clothed in purple and will have a gold chain placed around his neck, and he will be made the third highest ruler in the kingdom. Then all the king's wise men came in, but they could not read the writing or tell the king what it meant. So King Belshazzar became even more terrified, and his face grew more pale. His nobles were baffled. And so to skim through the next few verses, the queen suggested that they call in Daniel. Daniel was called in, and Belshazzar said to him, if you can read this writing and tell me what it means, you'll be clothed in purple, have a gold chain placed around your neck, and you'll be made the third highest ruler in the kingdom. Verse 17 says, then Daniel answered the king, you may keep your gifts for yourself, give your rewards to somebody else. Nevertheless, I will read the writing for the king, and I will tell him what it means. Then Daniel told about the arrogance of Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar's predecessor. Then Daniel addressed Belshazzar himself, and he says, but you, Belshazzar, have not humbled yourself, though you knew all this. You knew of the arrogance of Nebuchadnezzar and what it brought up on him. He said, verse 23, instead, you've set yourself up against the Lord of heaven. You had the goblets brought from his temple to you, and you and your nobles, your wives, your concubines drank from them. You praised the gods of gold and silver, a bronze, iron, wood, and stone, which cannot see or hear or understand, but you did not honor the God who holds in his hand your life and all your ways. Therefore, he sent the hand that wrote the inscription. This is in the inscription that was written, many, many tekel parson. Here's what these words mean. Many, God has numbered the days of your reign and brought it to an end. Tekel, you have been weighed on the scales and found wanting. Peres, your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. Then at Belshazzar's command, Daniel was clothed in purple. A gold chain was placed around his neck. He was proclaimed the third highest ruler in the kingdom. Then verse 30 says, but that very night, Belshazzar, king of the Babylonians, was slain. And Darius the Mede took over the kingdom. Belshazzar was partying 1 minute. He was parting this world the next minute. He was king of the world. Then he was king of nothing. What is a man profited if he gains the whole world but loses his soul? This man was a fool because he was living for the moment while he was on the threshold of eternity. It's said that a man once came to visit Robert Hall, the famous English preacher, similar to the rabbi account. He came there to take an exception to a statement that the preacher had recently made in a sermon on money. The preacher, Robert Hall, Mr. Hall, knew that the visitor had an excessive love of money, so he took a coin out of his pocket. He opened his Bible, and he pointed to the word God. He said, "Do you see that word there?" The man said, "Well, sure, I can see it. It says God." Then Mr. Hall laid the coin over top of the word, took the coin, laid it on top of the word, and then he said, "Can you see it now?" The love of money will wipe out any trace of God in one's life. Jesus said, "No one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he'll be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and riches." Matthew 6:24. The Bible says a lot about the danger of wealth, the danger of riches. But very few people are afraid of riches. The fundamental definition of covetous is having a great desire to possess something. Definition for greed is intense and selfish desire for something, especially wealth or power. You know, if somebody breaks the commands, let's say, and commits murder or becomes a thief, they're considered a criminal and considered to be worthy of shame. But if somebody breaks the command not to covet, if they are covetous, if they enthusiastically seek to fulfill their desires to possess things, they're often considered industrious and enterprising. Somebody says, "Well, Wayne, that was a wasted sermon. It applied only to maybe a couple of people here today, if that many, depends on how you judge these things." We tend to think of this lesson or lessons like it as having application only for the rich, but who are the rich? In USA Today, November 1991, that's almost 30 years ago, but I'm confident the results would be the same today or even more so. It says, according to a survey of people ought to know, who ought to know the, I'm sorry, how rich is rich? I better start with the question. This is the article. How rich is rich? According to a survey of people who ought to know, the answer is $1 million to $5 million in assets. Investment managers, and it gives their names, sponsored the survey of people who stand to give or receive inheritances, median household assets of $500,000. Paradoxically, 55% of those whose assets ranged from $1 million to $5 million did not consider themselves wealthy. To extend this step one point further, in a book called Fearfully and Wonderfully Made, one of the authors, Paul Brand, writes, "I've been rereading the record of the rich young ruler and his obviously wrong choice, but it has set me thinking. No matter how much wealth he had, he could not ride in a car, have surgery, turn on a light, buy penicillin, hear a pipe organ, watch TV, wash dishes in running water, type a letter, mow a lawn, fly in an airplane, sleep on an inner spring mattress, use a computer, or talk on a phone. If he was rich, then what am I?" Rich men in this parable thought he had a long time to live. But again, he was told, "This very night your life will be demanded from you." His possessions would be of no benefit to him now. he had not prepared for eternity. He would now harvest his deeds, not his fields. Paul said in 2 Corinthians 5, verse 10, we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ so that each of us may receive what is due for us, what is due us for the things done or the deeds done while in the body, whether good or bad. What if today is your last day on earth? Where will you spend eternity? Luke chapter 16, verses 19 through 31. I'll end by reading that text. Jesus gives us insights into the afterlife. He says, there was a certain rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. But there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, full of sores, who was laid at his gate, desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. So it was that the beggar died and was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried. Being in torments in Hades, the rich man lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. Then he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that in your lifetime you received your good things, and likewise Lazarus received evil things, but now he is comforted, and you are tormented. And besides all this, between us and you, there is a great gulf fixed so that those who want to pass from here to you cannot, nor can those from there pass to us. Then he said, I beg you, therefore, Father, that you would send him to my father's house, for I have five brothers, that he may testify to them, lest they also come to this place of torment. Abraham said to him, they have Moses and the prophets. Let them hear them. He said, no, Father Abraham, but if one goes to them from the dead, they will repent. Abraham said, if they do not hear Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rise from the dead. Only now, when it's too late, did the rich man begin to place a priority on spiritual matters. Only then, when it was too late, did he begin to think about others instead of just himself. Where will you spend eternity? Where will I spend eternity? Let's stand together and sing the song that's been chosen.